Today on Seculo, we have breaking news as we prepare to file a major brief in the Fonnie Willis disqualification appeal.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host.
Welcome to Seculo, executive producer Will Haynes today. And we've got a jam-packed show for you. So go ahead and like the show if you're watching on Rumble or on YouTube and share it with your friends. And if you want to call in on this Friday, go ahead and give me a call at 1-800-684-3110. We've got a lot to talk about. If you saw the title or heard the tease, I mentioned that there is a major movement in the Fonnie Willis disqualification case. Now, today at the ACLJ, we are filing. We are in process right now. I will get confirmation while we are on the air that we have filed a major brief in the appeals process asking the court, the appeals court in Georgia, to overturn Scott McAfee's decision, the lower court judge, to keep Fonnie Willis on the case. And I'll read from our brief. I've got a copy of it right here in my hand. It says the ACLJ's specific concern is the integrity and preservation of the judicial system in a case with national implications. The ACLJ files this brief on behalf of its members who reside in Georgia, as the district attorney at issue in this case represents quite literally the entirety of the people of Georgia. The ACLJ also files this brief on behalf of its members who do not reside in Georgia, but who are concerned that their ability to meaningfully vote for a president may be hampered by a politically motivated and infected prosecution still very much bearing, quote, an odor of mendacity. To preserve justice and confidence in the judicial process, amicus curiae urge this court to reverse the lower court and disqualify the district attorney. This case, as far as the lower proceedings, have been put on hold as the appeals court hears this appeal. They've set an argument date for October. I believe it's October 4th. So until then, nothing else will happen. We're going to talk about this more in the next segment with Professor Harry Hutchison, what the implications of our brief mean, what the appeals court could do, and also one issue that hasn't been addressed yet, what the immunity ruling out of the Supreme Court could mean for this case in Georgia. Now, nothing will happen until after the court has decided on her disqualification appeal that the Trump legal team put forward, because they paused all lower court proceedings until that is resolved. So we won't even get to those issues until October at the earliest, if they rule very quickly in this. But they take their time with these things. The appeals court many times takes months to sort out these issues, and we'll see what happens there and whether or not also that immunity ruling out of the Supreme Court has any bearing on whether or not a state can bring a RICO charge against a former president when that former president may have been doing some of the official duties listed by the Supreme Court in their immunity brief. That brings up the Constitution. It also brings up issues with the immunity ruling that came out of the Supreme Court. We also will have Secretary Mike Pompeo joining us in the third segment to talk about that press conference, the big boy press conference, as many had dubbed it, from President Biden last night, how he thinks he fared, what he thinks our adversaries were watching as they watched that press conference, and of course, some of the lapses that President Biden had during it. It didn't go as smoothly, I think, as they were hoping. It was a lot better than many thought, but at the same time, they definitely had some moments that were worth noting, and we'll talk about those as well. We have Rick Grinnell coming up in the second half hour talking about a little bit of a preview of the RNC next week, as well as more upon that NATO press conference that President Biden gave last night. And then finally, we'll wrap up the show with Jeff Balaban, the director of ACLJ Jerusalem, talking about some interesting news with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and maybe some interesting pushback she's getting from the far left of her party. So stick around. It's a packed show. And if you have any questions or comment, call me at 1-800-684-3110. We'd love to talk to you today on this Friday. But remember, we are in this Life and Liberty Challenge this month of July. It's a pivotal moment in history. It's more important than ever. And the ACLJ will push forward in the fight to defend life and liberty. Have your tax-deductible donation doubled today at aclj.org. That's aclj.org. Donate today. to the broadcast. Executive producer Will Haynes here today, and I am joined in studio by Professor Harry Hutchison. Professor Hutchison, we are talking about this brief the ACLJ is filing today. We should get confirmation any minute from our attorneys that it is officially filed at the appeals court in Georgia. And this is on the issue of Fani Willis's disqualification. Judge McAfee in the lower court had allowed her to stay on the case if her assistant, Nathan Wade, that special prosecutor in the case, was removed. But the language within his order was very condemning, almost gave a pathway for the appeals court to remove her without even having to do any sort of new fact-finding. It's all there. He said the odor of mendacity lingers. He talked about many things that may have not been legal that she did, and he said even at best it was improper.
Absolutely. So there is a clear and unmistakable record which suggests A, an actual conflict of interest, and secondarily, the appearance of a conflict of interest, and that destroys the integrity of the judicial system. Keep in mind that a prosecutor is supposed to be impartial. A prosecutor represents the state sovereignty of Georgia, and this prosecutor is basically charged with finding justice. Here, I think the facts suggest that Fani Willis and her boyfriend, Mr. Wade, engaged in actions which were designed to interfere with the 2024 election. And I think the Georgia Court of Appeals basically should disqualify her. And I think the facts in the record support that.
And I just got word from our legal team, from Ben Sisney, that it has officially been filed. So our brief is in at the appeals court at Georgia. And now, as I mentioned in the first segment, that we filed this not just as the ACLJ, but on behalf of our members, those of you that are champions, those of you that are donors to the ACLJ. We file on your behalf. These actions that we take are because you are a part of this organization, this grassroots organization. And if you get a chance this afternoon, I would encourage everyone to go read. We'll have a blog up shortly. We were waiting until it was filed, but there will be a blog up on ACLJ.org that goes over some of what's in the brief, but it also will link to the brief. And it's really important to read the words that the ACLJ is filing at the court, because on the surface, it can get caught up in this is just Trump versus the legal system. But really, why we have to file in these cases is because it has implications much broader than just President Trump, even though it is a very serious matter. But when you read this, the critical need, this is from our brief on page 4, the critical need for integrity and values served by the application of conflict jurisprudence applies with special force in this case. To be sure, these principles must and do govern in the prosecution of anyone. Justice, after all, is supposed to be blind, but they apply at least as strongly, if not more so, in the prosecution of a national candidate in an election year. And then we go on to say, the bad choices, prejudices, and personal political motivations of Fulton County's district attorney and the Georgia judiciary's response thereto impact the entire nation. The integrity of Georgia's criminal justice system, implicating its prosecutors and its courts, is at stake. When we talk about a time where you see the left attacking the Supreme Court, trying to discredit it, and other courts throughout the nation, labeling a judge in Georgia as a Trump judge, these phrases, this terminology, the way they try to spin the judicial system, causes there to be a lessening of confidence within the American people that justice will be served. And to some degree, you can understand why some people may think that justice isn't served in many cases in this country, but we at the ACLJ want to preserve that. We want to strengthen the integrity of our judicial system because the rule of law is so paramount in our country. What do you think, though, about those national implications of this case in Georgia?
Well, I think the national implications are paramount. And I think if you look at the Georgia case, what we find is corruption. We find a lack of integrity, and we find an attempt, in my view, by Fani Willis to destroy the judicial system. So the ACLJ has filed in this case in order to preserve the integrity of the judicial system. And I think it's very, very important. Why? Because there is this conflict which the trial court essentially found. And I think if you go back and you look at the evidence, you look at the testimony of Fani Willis, you look at the testimony of Mr. Wade, basically Mr. Wade profited from this prosecution and Fani Willis profited both personally and arguably financially from this prosecution. And thirdly, let me point out that Fani Willis, there's evidence on the record suggesting that she spent time in the White House. And so I think if you put all of these facts together, basically the American people should not trust this particular prosecution, and they should see it as additional evidence of an attempt by the Democrats to interfere with the 2024 election like they interfered with the 2016 election and the 2020 election with the Hunter Biden laptop fake story, which basically was signed off by 51 so-called security
intelligence officials.
Officials. And we now know that that letter was essentially a lie. And so I think at the end of the day, if you look at this particular case, the Fani Willis case, the odor of mendacity, the odor of corruption, the odor of a conflict of interest, it's all there.
And as we point out in our brief, the conflict of interest just has to be an appearance of a conflict of interest because it is so critical that the people be able to trust that justice will be impartial. And we point this out. We reference two Georgia cases, so it's always important, obviously, when you're talking to a state court to reference their own judicial precedent. And what here we reference two cases, Golden versus State and also Conley versus Arnold, which were two Georgia cases that dealt with disqualification. And I want to read this section. It's on page 7. It says, the Georgia Supreme Court further clarified, so that's clarifying from Golden versus State, in a similar factual situation, that when an appearance of impropriety exists, no representation should be permitted, regardless of whether there is evidence of wrongful intent. In other words, an appearance of wrongdoing alone is disqualifying. And when you take that with the words of Judge McAfee, in his opinion, which he released keeping Fani Willis on the case, but getting rid of Nathan Wade, the special prosecutor, it appears that he did make the incorrect judicial ruling based off of Georgia Supreme Court precedent of there being just an appearance of impropriety, because he himself said there was an odor of mendacity lingering, that the remedy of just taking part of the prosecution away doesn't remedy that odor of mendacity.
Absolutely. And furthermore, there is Supreme Court precedent which suggests that Fani Willis should be disqualified. And so if you look at the United States Supreme Court decision in Young versus the United States Supreme Court has noted that some errors are so fundamental and pervasive, they require reversal without regard to the facts or circumstances of a particular case. An error is fundamental if it undermines confidence in the integrity of the criminal proceedings. And so if you look at the action of Mr. Wade, if you look at the actions of Fani Willis, they have in concert worked to undermine the integrity and confidence in the criminal proceedings in this case. The criminal proceedings in this case, in my opinion, are designed to profit Fani Willis and Mr. Wade, both financially and personally. And I think the American people should not have any confidence in this particular prosecution. Hence, the Georgia Court of Appeals should reverse this particular case, remove Fani Willis, and perhaps collapse the entire prosecution with respect to Mr. Trump. In addition to which, there is the immunity decision, right, which is hanging out there. And many of the actions that Mr. Trump engaged in were arguably official acts And official acts, particularly protected by the Constitution, are subject to what? Absolute immunity.
And therefore, a state can't criminalize the actions of a president if they are acting officially.
Absolutely.
But that issue we'll have to talk about next year, because we are not going to get a ruling on this probably before the end of the year, because they're not hearing the oral argument on it until October. And then the ruling will come early 2025. And depending on how that goes, we'll see if they even need to get to the immunity issue. But folks, as we just explained here with this critical brief we filed today, we are fighting each and every day to defend life and liberty, both here in America and abroad. We would love your support of the ACLJ during this Life and Liberty drive. You can go to aclj.org and have your tax-deductible gift doubled during this month of July, aclj.org. Welcome back to Seculo. Executive producer Will Haynes sitting in for Logan and Jordan today. And I have on the broadcast right now former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, our senior counsel for global affairs at the ACLJ. Secretary Pompeo, last night President Biden gave a solo press conference, which many in the media dubbed as the big boy press conference. But it was mainly a moment for him to try and showcase his grasp of the issues, his ability to face the scrutiny of reporters, especially with all the negative press post now more than 2 weeks ago, his disastrous debate performance with President Trump. But during last night's press conference, it was mostly on foreign policy. It was at the tail end of this NATO summit. A lot of Americans were focused on President Biden's ability to answer the questions from the reporters and how he came across. But what I'm curious about, what do you think our adversaries, China, Russia, Iran, because we know that they have been watching the United States very closely during this election season, especially, I would assume, during these last couple weeks. What do you think our adversaries saw last night?
Well, Will, it's great to be with you. I think our adversaries saw two things. One was the substance of the press conference. How did President Biden do? You know, I, at some level, I think, you know, he did fine. He had some things he said wrong that suggest, you know, he's unable to organize his thoughts. And so they certainly would have seen that. But I think that our adversaries have known for a long time, not just these last 2 weeks after the debate, but I think they've observed him over the last 3.5 years. Not able to actually demonstrate American resolve and American power. And they've watched his incapability of delivering American security around the world. So I think in some sense they're watching this thinking, nothing to see here, folks. We have a weak president of the United States, and this will give us room and space to harm the American people. So I think this would have just reinforced that. Second, I think they also saw last night an America that has set the bar so low for a president, for a commander-in-chief, the gentleman who holds the nuclear codes for the United States of America. They saw the bar set so low that if he just, you know, was able to walk up to the podium, not completely blow it and then walk away from the podium, that this would be viewed as success. I think that just reinforces the risk to the people of the United States. I think our adversaries saw a president of the United States that has failed to deliver on the basic things that have made America both secure and prosperous, and certainly where America was in January of 2021 when President Trump left office.
Well, and that point you made about setting the bar so low, that's something we discussed in our meeting this morning, was that everyone was praising him on MSNBC, saying, look, he did it. He got through it, which should be a minimum thing that you could pull off as president of the United States. And you even referenced after the debate that the mental state of the president could be indeed a national security risk. And when you are seeing this issue play out where just making it through questioning, I couldn't really recall any major answer on foreign policy that he said last night. Yes, he answered them sufficiently, but there was nothing revelatory about the way he answered these questions. He just survived a press conference and made everyone, what every main takeaway was the two major missteps he made about whether it be referring to his vice president as Vice President Trump, or referring to Zelensky as Putin, which are probably the two worst gaffes he could have made on that stage, being about foreign policy. But even that setting the bar so low, I can't think of any really foreign policy issue that I really took away from it. And is that a problem that's what we come out of?
Well, it's a huge problem. Think about the various audiences. So there was certainly the American audience where, coming out of a NATO summit, you're supposed to articulate your vision for how you're going to protect Americans and make our country successful. Then you have the audience in the room, NATO, other NATO leaders from around the world. They were hoping for policy, right? Things that America would do. And yet it is the case that Vladimir Putin has invaded Europe on President Biden's watch. And he made no policy change that would somehow suggest, hey, here's my plan for American victory, for Western victory, for a NATO victory. He didn't articulate what that would look like, what the standard was, or how it was. This was just about like the NCAA tournament, survive in advance, right? He got through this, and he gets to still be the potential candidate for not Democratic candidate for president of the United States for at least another day. Now this is dangerous. The Chinese Communist Party, Chairman Kim in North Korea, Vladimir Putin for sure, and even think about the Iranian leadership. They all now have taken on board that the standard for an American president is now that he can finish 4 out of 5 sentences successfully. That puts America in a really bad place. It's been the bipartisan tradition that we've looked to our commander in chief to be able to do far more than that. We expect far higher standards. And we need to make sure we've got a president that is capable of delivering against that higher standard successfully in the years ahead.
Mr. Secretary, one final question for you. And you have a great piece up at ACLJ.org. I encourage everyone that's watching or listening to go read it. It's America's Mounting Debt is a National Security Threat. Now, as conservatives, we are always concerned about the fiscal responsibility of our government, and the national debt has been an issue within conservative circles that have been a concern for a long time. But normally when we think about this, we think about it in terms of American prosperity at home, about future generations, what our economic development will look like. Can you explain a little bit about why you see this actually as a national security threat as well?
You bet. Well, so look, I really wanted to write this piece that's up on ACLJ. Now, I wanted to write this piece because the connection between America's finances and American security is so tightly interlinked. It's not just the capacity to spend money to pay our soldiers and to take care of our military and have a strong, capable military. That's certainly true. You have to make sure you devote the appropriate amount of resources. And if you're broke or in debt, and you can't do that, you create risk. But second, the American economy is the bulwark of American national security. The fact that the dollar is the primary currency in which the globe exchanges resources is a central part of America's power and our place in the world and our security. And when you are running deficits that are a couple trillion dollars a year, you are putting that at risk. That the world will move away from the United States, and that will make America both poorer and less secure in the years ahead. I must say, this is a bipartisan failure. The Republican presidents have failed to take this on in a serious way as well. We all need to get this right. It is an absolute imperative. When interest alone on the national debt exceeds your defense budget, you're putting your nation at risk.
Secretary Pompeo, thank you as always for joining us on the broadcast, and thank you for being a part of the team. Folks, you heard great insight from Secretary Pompeo, not just on the press conference that everyone was talking about this morning, but also on an issue that is near and dear to many conservatives' heart, and that is the fiscal responsibility, the national debt issue that we have in this country as we see it run away in the past few years, and you see inflation dogging down everyone's ability to live out the American dream. But we are not taking it sitting down. We are going to fight back. And that's why in this Life and Liberty Drive, we are pushing forward in the fight to defend life and liberty here at the ACLJ. Your gifts are doubled dollar for dollar during this Life and Liberty Drive. So if you go to ACLJ.org and donate today, your gift will be doubled. Once again, We are taking action today, filing a critical amicus brief to disqualify Fani Willis from prosecuting Trump in Georgia. We're also appearing in court today defending a teacher who was told she couldn't pray anywhere students might see her. Donate today, ACLJ.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo.
Welcome back to Seculo, everyone. Executive producer Will Haynes sitting in the host chair today. We just talked about in the first half hour of the broadcast our brief that we filed today in Georgia. It has officially been filed, and that is on the appeal of Fani Willis staying on the prosecution of President Trump in Georgia. We also talked with Secretary Pompeo a little bit about that press conference, the big boy press conference that President Biden gave last night at the tail end of the NATO summit, and the implications of that, as well as some issues surrounding our national debt. He has a great piece up at ACLJ.org. You should check out America's Mounting Debt is a National Security Threat. But there is an update I wanted to give you today about something we talked about yesterday. And this was a slide that was allegedly shown at Fort Liberty, formerly Fort Bragg in North Carolina, which was talking about terrorist groups. And it's on the screen if you're watching live. And it listed the logo of Operation Rescue, National Right to Life. It had the New York license plate, the vanity plate you can pick that says Choose Life on it. And it talked about the activities of pro-life activists, whether it be a life chain or protesting or picketing and many other issues that are normal activities, but it's listed under terrorist groups. And we talked about it yesterday, but it was still not confirmed. It was reported. It had all the signs that it was real. It had official insignia. You could see the shoulder of someone in military fatigues. So it certainly looked, and it didn't look good enough almost to be like an AI-generated image. But we did caution that we are going to try to get to the bottom of this. We are going to start drafting up a FOIA to go to the fort, to the base, formerly Fort Bragg, now Fort Liberty, and try to get to the bottom of it. But overnight, there has been an update that this is indeed confirmed. This was a real slide that was shown to members of our armed forces talking about terrorism. And this is a statement from Fort Liberty that was put out, and it says, attention. It came to our attention that an anti-terrorism slide was posted on social media. After conducting a commander's inquiry, we determined that the slides presented on social media were not vetted by the appropriate approval authorities and do not reflect the views of the Airborne Corps, I believe that is the 18th Airborne Corps at Fort Liberty, and the U.S. Army or the Department of Defense. The slides were developed by a local garrison employee to train soldiers manning access control points at Fort Liberty. These slides will no longer be used, and all future training products will be reviewed to ensure they align with the current DOD anti-terrorism guidance. That is a problem. They are confirming it is real. They are confirming that anti-terrorism training to ensure that those soldiers manning access control points to Fort Liberty were being trained on how to deal with pro-life advocates. They were blanketly claiming Operation Rescue, an organization that ACLJ has its foundations defending, and the National Right to Life, were indeed terrorist groups that need to be watched out for at control points to Fort Liberty. I can confirm with you this as well, that our team is not backing off on the FOIA request. In fact, we now have more information to make it a much more targeted FOIA request to get more information to really get to the bottom of this. But also, our colleagues at ACLJ Action are working with members of Congress right now on responses. So when we see this, we get to work. We don't just sit around and talk about it. We do talk about it. We come on air every day, 5 days a week, and we talk about it. We inform you about it. But we also have teams of government affairs officials and attorneys that get right to work on also making a difference, getting to the bottom of it, and ensuring it doesn't happen again. We see this disgusting bias creeping throughout the entirety of our government against people that are pro-life, that want to support life, that want to support mothers that feel like they have no option. but abortion. They want to come alongside them and lift them up and show them a different way. We do all this work because of you. We fight hard every day for life and liberty at ACLJ. Donate today and have your gift doubled, ACLJ.org. To Seculo, executive producer Will Haynes sitting in the host chair today, and I am joined by Rick Grinnell. And Rick, we had a big boy press conference last night, is what the press dubbed it. I wanted to play a bite right off the bat because this is really one of the main takeaways was when President Biden announced who his vice presidential running mate is, I guess. Let's go ahead and play bite two.
What concerns do you have about Vice President Harris's ability to beat Donald Trump if she were at the top of the ticket?
Look, I wouldn't have picked Vice President Trump to be vice president, but I think she was not qualified to be president. So let's start there.
So, Rick, we had gaffes. We had lapses last night. The left just said, look, he didn't do that bad. He, and to his credit, he, for the most part, stayed on answer. It was fairly dull, which was probably good for him at this point. But what was your takeaway aside from the gaffes, the two major ones? We'll play the other one in a minute because they were probably the worst gaffes he could make at this point. But what was your initial take on the substance or lack thereof of his press conference last night?
Well, look, we keep having this debate about the messenger, and not a lot of people are talking about the message. I mean, we've got wars and inflation and an open border and chaos, but we just keep talking about the messenger. My attitude is that Joe Biden was this way for the past several years, and Democrats voted for him. We had an election. They had an election, and it was clear that all states— Democrats in all the states wanted Joe Biden. So Joe Biden is their nominee. And, you know, he's just going to have to figure out a way to build back better. My attitude is that he's completely the legitimate nominee. And this group of elites in D.C. that are trying to undermine our democracy and come up with a new slate of candidates, I think is terrible. They shouldn't be allowed to do it. Elections have consequences. We have to face the choices that we make, the consequences of our choices. And they chose Joe Biden, so that's their candidate. They got to go with them all the way to November. Otherwise, you're undermining democracy, right? Democracy, blah, blah, blah.
That's the biggest problem here. In the Democrat Party is never afraid of hypocrisy when it serves their own good. And as you've heard throughout this entire election, through the primaries, that the greatest threat to democracy is President Trump. And what do the Democrats do to try to preserve that democracy? They run a primary, and President Biden was, in theory, opposed, not really by a serious candidate for opposing a sitting president, but there were votes cast, and he did win those votes. And now they have picked their party's leader. And yet they're rushing to try to figure out how to fix their problem of democracy. And we had Tulsi Gabbard on the show yesterday, who had the insight of being a former vice chair of the DNC a lifetime ago. But we asked that question to her directly. Are they willing to just throw out their rules in order to get what they see as their greatest outcome? And she said affirmatively, yes, they will do whatever they think it takes the Democrat elites to win. And doesn't that just show you that they don't care about the voice of the people and never have?
Well, I'm shocked at how many reporters and newsrooms I'm seeing that are literally just calling for an undermining of democracy. They're just outright wanting Joe Biden replaced. They're not even talking about the election that every state had to pick Joe Biden. I've never seen reporters so gleeful in undermining democracy. They don't even mention it, Will. They don't even say anything about the process other than it's clear Joe Biden is going to lose, so we should replace him. And I find it incredibly troubling.
And I did want to play this other bite because, once again, call them gaffes, call them lapses for a moment while on stage. But this one, I feel like when the Democrats have put so much effort and time and American resources into Ukraine, to have this happen on stage with the president of Ukraine standing right next to him has got to be the peak embarrassment moment for Jake Sullivan and Anthony Blinken. Let's go ahead and play bite one and get Rick's reaction.
And now I want to hand it over to the president of Ukraine, who has as much courage as he has determination. Ladies and gentlemen, President Putin. President Putin. You can beat President Putin. President Zelensky. I'm so focused on beating Putin, we got to worry about it. Anyway.
At least he caught himself there at the end, unlike with his misstatement of who was his vice president. But as someone who has worked for presidents in high-level roles, what do you think the Jake Sullivan, Anthony Blinken feelings were as they were sitting there in that room watching that unfold?
Well, I think for 3 years, all of the senior staff and cabinet have been holding their breath whenever Joe Biden goes to a microphone. They've known this. We've seen clips on Air Force One, for instance, where you have Anthony Blinken really nervous about what Joe Biden is saying in front of the press. Now we see Anthony Blinken in this moment shut his eyes and just completely get embarrassed. They've known this. There needs to be a full investigation, and that investigation needs to reveal who knew that the president of the United States was sick and didn't tell us.
Rick, we have the Republican National Convention kicking off Monday in Milwaukee. I know that you'll be there. You'll be participating in a panel with Jordan on lawfare, which I'm very excited to hear how that goes. But we see a time where the Republicans are probably hoping maybe we don't want to have a convention because the news cycle's so great right now. But what are your thoughts on heading into the RNC next week?
Yeah, look, we're going next week, the Republicans. It's I think, bad timing because the Democrats are not coming right after us. There's 2 week break for the Olympics. So we go, then 2 weeks of the Olympics, and then the Democrats go. I think that's giving them a little bit of an advantage. They're going to be able to kind of control the messaging, slow down what's happening. I do think it's bad for them in one aspect is that if they want to replace Joe Biden, they need momentum. They need more people to come out. And what's about to happen is Joe Biden's going to get a 3 week vacation, Republicans, and then the Olympics, and then he comes back. So this could be terrible timing for the Democrats.
Rick, thank you so much for joining us as always. I look forward to hearing how the Lawfare panel, that's with Jordan and our attorney Ben Sisney, that'll be taking place, I believe, on Tuesday at the RNC. So looking forward to that. And I know our team will be up there capturing that, and we'll probably play some clips from it here on the broadcast. But it's a very important issue, especially to be showcasing that and talking about that while at the RNC. So safe travels, Rick, and we will talk to you soon. But folks, we are in the middle of our Life and Liberty drive this month of July. And this pivotal moment in history, it is more important than ever that the ACLJ push forward and fight to defend life and liberty. And that's the reason we've launched our Life and Liberty Drive. And your gifts are doubled dollar for dollar during this drive. Biden defiantly claims he will remain president. And we know what he means. More government corruption, more targeting of political rivals, and more betrayal of Israel. But we are fighting back. Today, we have officially filed an amicus brief in the disqualification appeal of Fannie Willis to stop her prosecution of President Trump in the Georgia court case there. We are also appearing in court today to defend a teacher who was told she couldn't pray anywhere students might see her. That's in court in Houston, Texas. And I got to update also that our attorneys are now looking to prepare for trial in that case in early 2025. So we have time to prepare, but that we will be moving forward in that case, protecting that teacher whose rights were violated by being told she could not be praying. She could not be seen praying. She could not pray anywhere that a student could see her. And we've also just submitted a major filing to defend Israel at the ICC. And we have filed a FOIA request, a FOIA lawsuit, over Biden withholding aid from Israel. Thank you for your support. Because of your support, we can continue these battles. We fight every day. As I mentioned earlier, when we see the egregious slide that was on anti-terrorism out of Fort Liberty, formerly Fort Bragg in North Carolina, we didn't just read about it and come on here and talk about it. We immediately took action. We mobilized our attorneys to start the FOIA request process, and our government affairs team immediately was talking with members of Congress to figure out how we could partner with them to push back on this. But it's only because of you we have these resources to come to you every single day, every weekday on this broadcast to explain these issues, but also to have the teams of attorneys and government affairs experts that are able to get to work right away. We do that because of ACLJ donors, and right now is a great time to donate to keep us fighting the never-ending attacks on our freedoms. Your gifts are double during our Life and Liberty Drive. Go to ACLJ.org and donate today. Welcome to Seculo. This is the final segment of the broadcast, and I am joined today by Senior Counsel Jeff Balaban, who is the director of ACLJ Jerusalem. And Jeff, there's an interesting story out today, and this comes on the heels of yesterday. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the congresswoman from New York, filed impeachment articles against Justice Thomas and Alito, and it was ridiculous. It's absurd. She has the right to do it, but we got on here and talked a little bit about the craziness of that. And now, though, you'd think as she's doing this move to build up her liberal chops within her party, in the left wing of her party, there's some criticism coming from an unlikely source. And this is from the Democratic Socialists of America, the national party that she has had a strong relationship with her entire career as a congresswoman, is now withdrawing their conditional endorsement of the congresswoman. And their concern is not that she's all of a sudden become right wing, or that she's not not going after the right Supreme Court justices. It's actually Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is one of the most vocal critics of Israel in the United States Congress with her other squad members, had a event that she co-sponsored with some Jewish leaders to combat anti-Semitism. And that is too much for the Democrat Socialists of America. Jeff, what are your thoughts and take on this one? And it looks like we may have Jeff frozen. We'll try to fix that really quickly. But essentially, they took issue with some of her recent moves, including a panel with leaders from the Jewish Council on Public Affairs. And the group said that they are lobbyists for the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance and their definition of anti-Semitism. Folks, it's not enough to just not want to fund Israel or to be a heavy critic of Israel if you're a Democrat anymore. Now you can be the leader of that movement, the original squad member, along with Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar. And it's not enough to just do all these things to support the anti-Semitic protests that are happening on campuses around this country, or the actions they take by trying to block funding to Israel. That's not enough for the Democrat Socialists. They're going to withdraw their endorsement of her if she doesn't correct course and get more anti-Semitic. The fact that she would have an event with Jewish leaders and try to combat anti-Semitism makes the Democrat Socialists want to withdraw their endorsement of her. Shows you how far we've fallen in this country. We are no longer allowed to just be supportive and want to end anti-Semitism. If we do that, you're going to be target number one of the left. Jeff, what are your thoughts on this?
Thanks. And I don't know what just happened there. We had a little technical glitch on my end. I don't know if you spoke through it, but I disappeared there for a while. And I heard your intro and part of this, so I apologize to everybody. But this is a fascinating story, and it's important to watch the progress of this on the left. You know, just a few years ago, at the 2018 election, Tom Perez, who was the new chairman of the Democratic National Convention, called DSA, the Democrat Socialists of America, called them the future of the party, the future of the Democratic Party. And all the energy and trend has been for the party to become more and more left-wing. Joe Biden was sort of a throwback, and he was the veneer, but obviously he has not been the one making policy. And their policies are crashing and burning, because the truth is, the energy in their party, they've decided that because it's such a close electorate, they're going to sort of extend out further to the extreme and bring in fringe elements. Well, this is a perfect example of how nuts these fringe elements are, William. I mean, they want an agenda of genocide. They want an agenda of BDS, which is terrorism. Right. It is economic. But beyond that, it is every place it goes, they claim it's just economic. It becomes the excuse for physical violence against Jews, for the physical expulsion of Jews, for the murder of Jews. And that's their actual agenda. And because AOC is supposed to be a public face and she's trying to push that agenda, but not speak like an extremist, she's not enough for them. And so they can't endorse her. Look at their platform, right? That Israel shouldn't be allowed to defend its citizens. But the truth is, this is savaging the Democratic Party. It's savaging the left altogether. And this is a perfect example.
Well, and I think this is a very important point that you and I talked about after the show you were on earlier this week, is that we saw a great thing happen where some deans, well, we couched it, a great thing on paper, we'll see, make sure that Columbia follows through, but that some deans were taken out of their position for anti-Semitic text messages that they were spreading around about the Jewish students that were concerned for their safety on campus at Columbia earlier this year. And you brought up the point that we have a very narrow Republican majority in the House. I believe it's only 4 seats right now. If it were 4 seats the other way, none of this would have ever happened, of rooting out a lot of this anti-Semitism, whether it be the presidents of Ivy League universities that were canned after their disastrous performance before Congress. Because the Democrats right now, as you said, the future of the party is the Democrat Socialists of America. Though, if they're afraid of losing support from that radical wing of the party, there's no way they're going to hold hearings on this to hold higher education to a better standard or to try to root out anti-Semitism. They're going to absolutely let it flourish. And so none of these things would have changed. That it's important that we bring this to light, and that the Republicans in Congress that can bring it to light do so, or else you're going to see a lot more Democrat socialists pushing congressional members to say, hey, you better not even have a friend that's Jewish, or else we're not going to endorse you.
I mean, that's 100% correct. Look, by the way, I think we're down to 3 seats because there was a special election for George Santos' seat, which is in a district very close to where my family resides in New York. And he was ousted and replaced by a Democrat. So I think we're down to 3. And those were shockers. In other words, the Republicans did not have a good midterm election. And the Democrats had the Senate and the White House, obviously, and they almost had the House, but there were 4 seats in New York, of all places, that flipped from blue to red. And that was specifically because New York State, including the New York Times and the governor, they launched an attack on private religious Jewish education. They're trying to basically get in there and mess it up. And so the religious Jewish community in those districts, which like to deck, you know, government money for the school systems, which are private school systems, said, no, not at this cost. And otherwise, the Republicans wouldn't have a majority. And if it were not for, you know, the chairman of, or chairwoman, Virginia Fox of education, we would not see any of this. If it not for Lee Stefanik being in leadership, we would not see any of this. And so it matters tremendously, because left to themselves, we would already be in a position of no funding for Iron Dome, support for BDS, and using the fleet, which is now parked right near Israel, not against a threat to Iran, but directly and exclusively as a threat to Israel. Right now, it's to threaten both of them. Mm. But it's the threat. So it's unbelievably important.
Folks, don't let the lies that the Democrats say when they say they don't want to be funding Israel is because they're concerned that Israel is committing genocide. As a matter of fact, Israel is taking every precaution to protect against genocide. And don't believe it when they say they just are concerned about funding, that it's not deeply rooted in anti-Semitism and lies about the Jewish people. It's disgusting, and we won't stand for it here at the ACLJ. And that's why, during this Life and Liberty drive, you can be a part of our team as we fight every day to preserve the life and liberty of Americans here and abroad. Go to ACLJ.org. Your gift will be doubled. It supports the work of this broadcast, of Jeff as he works in Jerusalem at ACLJ Jerusalem, of the team members like Rick and Mike that we had on earlier, former Secretary of State, former Director of National Intelligence. All of this comes because of your support. Go to ACLJ.org and have your gift doubled during our Life and Liberty Drive. Donate today.